Now, in previous lessons, we have also learned that the universe is within us, not outside us, as we commonly supposed. This, of course, does not mean that there is no external universe. There obviously is. But we know it only by our perception. We cognize it within ourselves. It, therefore, exists for us in the mind, made up by a mass of ideas. Now let me reread to you those last two sentences. In previous lessons, we have learned that the universe is within us and not outside us, as we commonly supposed. This, of course, does not mean that there is no external universe. There obviously is. But we know it only by our perception. We cognize it within. It therefore exists for us in the mind, made up by a mass of ideas. And since we made all the ideas that compose our own mind, then we see the universe as we are, and not as it is. Now, can you see the reason of this? Can you see the logic of it? If not, try to reason it out for yourself. For it is very important that this conception of things should be firmly lodged in the mind, as without it, we shall have difficulty in adjusting ourselves to the reality of things. Now, think of it in this way. The only knowledge our vision gives us of the sun is a sensation of light. This is stored up in our memory. Now, every time that we look at the sun, our idea of it is added to. Therefore, so far as we are concerned, the sun only exists as an idea. Hence, we find that the sun is a mental concept. Now, what is true of the sun is true of all other objects, since we see them in the light of the sun. And so we see that the whole of the external universe exists in mind, in our mind, in your mind for you, in my mind for me. And so we are led to see that we pervade the whole of it. Now, if this line of reasoning is clear to you, you will at once arrive at an idea of the all-pervading as applied to yourself. When we realize this as a conviction, we identify ourselves with the omnipresence, do we not? Now, let us see if I can give you a very clear and simple illustration. Sit and meditate on this. I now occupy this chair. The chair is in the room. I occupy the room. The room is in the house. I occupy the house. But the house is in the city. I therefore occupy the city. The city is in the state. I occupy the state. If the first is true, so is the last. So I extend the idea to the country, to the continent. It may seem a stretch of the imagination, yet is nonetheless true that I occupy the earth. Am I not sitting, standing, walking upon the earth? It is but another step in the reasoning to assert that I occupy the universe. If the proposition that I occupy the room is true, well then so is the latter proposition true. I hope you can all see that. Again, in an earlier lesson we saw that whatever the Creator is, we are. Now we do not doubt that the Creator is omnipresent. Therefore, we too must be omnipresent. Whether we realize it or not, the idea propounded in the last paragraph of Occupation teaches us to realize that we are like the Creator, all-pervading. Is not the dewdrop a part of the ocean? But, my beloved, if you do not see it clearly, it will come to you by persistent meditation. Therefore, persistently meditate upon this. And we come to see ourselves as we are, instead of how we appear to be. We see ourselves immortal, imperishable, limitless, self-contained, self-existent, one with the essence of life. Or, as Jesus the Christ said, I and my Father, the Source, are one and the same thing. Now, enough, perhaps, has appeared in this present lesson to show us that man is peculiarly liable to misinterpret the phenomena around him. Obviously, then, what we have to do in mental physics is to correct this illusion so that we may know things as they are and not as they appear. When we perceive a thing through the senses, we say that we are conscious of it. That is, we cognize it through the senses. Now, the senses do not perceive, that is, know. The senses themselves do not know. The act of perception is done by the knower, the mind. This could be explained even by me much more technically than this. But for our purpose, it is sufficient to state that perceiving is done by the mind. Now, we know that every particle of our body is connected up with a very fine network of nerves. If you want to see how intricate they are, just put the point of the finest needle on your skin anywhere and see that as quick as you can imagine anything, that prick is reported to the brain. It is true, then, to say that a man is all nerves. The great receiving station is situated in the brain. When anything is wrong in the body, it is known at this particular station. There we are warned of danger, whether it be within or without. Now, my beloved, we there see, I trust, that man is a little universe, a microcosm, but a part of the macrocosm. We can put it in a simpler way. We can say, me and not me. Man is conscious of a not me through the senses. He sees the sunshine. He feels that the day is warm and so on. And then we can say that he is conscious of the universe. But he also feels and sees his own body and is thus conscious of himself when we say that he is self-conscious. All ideas that enter through the senses are first cognized, then perceived, and then they sink into that department of the mind which we call the subconscious mind. Now, the capacity to receive and store ideas in the subconscious mind is unlimited, simply unlimited, without limit. It is important to remember this. Over and beyond this, there is a department of feeling that is not sense feeling. This is the emotion center. For instance, we feel love for others, for objects about us, for our country, and so on. We love these objects that cause us pleasure. Objects of sense are all the time being translated into terms of emotion. For instance, we love to hear beautiful music and so forth. We do not stop to ask why this is so, but we know that it gives us pleasure. And when we analyze that pleasure, we find that it is the emotions that are delighted, rather, that we are delighted through our emotions. I want you here to particularly grip the fact that the pleasure is not in the senses as such, but in the mind, where the senses are translated into terms of emotion. Now, this is most important. Let us think of our senses and our emotions. Now think for a moment that each sense has its own organ. The sense of sight, the eye, the sense of smell, the nose, and so on. But it is not so with the emotions. They are not located in any organ, but are felt throughout the whole body. For example, some person tells us something that makes us feel joy. And when we think of it, why, we know that we feel joy all over. What actually happens is that the message in words is carried over the great trunk line from ear to the brain. There, it is translated into pleasure or joy. And when it is referred back, so to speak, to every tissue, and we literally tingle with joy and delight. In fact, that which we previously had explained to us as a magnet is simply lit up with the fire of love, in this case, joy. Now, to me, as I speak, this is very simple. I trust that it will fall upon your ears and you will be able to see similar and feel similar simplicity. Now you will, going further, know also that we can reduce matter to an eon of electric energy. Well, here we find it electrified by the emotion of joy. It is vitally important to remember this, for this is the manner in which we are playing on this wonderful electrical instrument of ours all the time. And we are led to see that the greater part of senses are translated into terms of emotion. Just as in electricity there are the positive and the negative poles, so in man, in you, in me, there is a positive and a negative. In the case of man, we call it love and hate. Love, gloriously positive. And hate, destructively negative. But let this fact sink deeply into you. It is possible to love the negative. Many people do. The bearing of this upon our subject will probably be apparent to you, but in future lessons we shall elucidate it a little more. So many people hug negative things to themselves. I once knew a man who lived in Hartford, Connecticut. He was a millionaire. There was nothing whatsoever in life that others looking in would expect that could be added unto him. He had everything. But he had sinus trouble. And he used to talk about his sinus. And it was ever with him. He loved his sinus. And whenever anybody met him, he began instantaneously, almost, to talk about his silence. Not so us. Let us, my beloved, as we add this meditation to our lesson during this coming week, let us think of that positive and negative within ourselves. And let us declare it with all our heart and with all our being, accentuate the positive. I and the Creator are one. I am the creative spirit. I am immortal. I am imperishable. I am self-existent. I am all-pervading. My beloved, you are now getting to the point where tremendous truths will rapidly unfold to you. You are required to be silent upon these things. Discuss them with no one. Go and tell no man. As you will more and more consider and study and practice this lesson, may you feel the light of the divine wisdom simply flooding you. Be still this week. Live in the serenity of your own inward peace. And as for me, I shall be with you. And as I leave you now, I wish you peace that passes knowledge. Peace be unto you.